Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for a prayer by Senator Emery. Senator Emery, and after that, please remain standing for a pledge of allegiance to the flag.
From the book of James we read, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways." Heavenly Father, I pray that you will keep us today from double-mindedness and grant us wisdom. I come to you this morning in the name and through the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ, thanking you for breath and for life itself. Thank you for the opportunity you've given each of us today to serve you and the citizens of Missouri. I believe it is with one voice today that we bring before your throne the names of all those in uniform, whether at home or abroad, who serve daily to protect our lives and our freedoms from enemies, foreign or domestic. We plead your mercies and grace upon those whose lives were taken or violently disrupted this week by the terrorist attack in Manchester, England. Somehow bring divine comfort to survivors and healing to the wounded. Father, as we go about our constitutional business today, may we be directed by the mind of Christ to seek peace and pursue it in every situation or conversation. Direct every outcome for the benefit of those we serve and for your glory. I pray in the name of your Son and my Savior. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Another nice job by a tall senator.
Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hegeman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibla, Munzlinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schaff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Wieland.
Senator from the 14th. Senator 14th's out here. A quorum being present, the Senate is now in session. Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, first extra session, second day, Wednesday, May 24, 2017. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment. President Pro Tem Richard in the chair. Resolutions. On behalf of Senator Shoup, Senator Kehoe offered.
Let's have order. Along the wall, order. Continue, Secretary.
Senator Kehoe.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You heard
read.
The motion by the Senator from Cole. Does any senator desire to be heard? Those opinion the motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it.
Mr. President.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, Don Shrubshell from Columbia Daily Tribune has been granted permission to take photos and video in the Senate chamber today.
Introduction of guests. Senator from Cape Girardeau. Proceed.
Left. On behalf of the senator from Butler and myself, welcome Ron Randon from Portageville with SRG Global, which opened a huge 450 employees and over $1 investment, and have a big facility up in St. Francis area, so we am having confidence in the state of Missouri.
Senate, come to order. Let's allow the senator from Cape to make his introduction. Continue.
Welcome, Ron Randon.
Will the guests of the senator from Butler and senator from Cape Girardeau please rise and be recognized, and the Senate make them feel welcome. Senator from Buchanan.
The senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, yield. Proceed.
Thank you for taking my inquiry, Senator. During the session, when we passed the budget, one of the items that we passed was the funding for the Medicaid managed care expansion. And during this last week, or a week and a half ago, I was on the MoHealthNet Oversight Committee. I was on the phone call. And I inquired of Jennifer Tidball, who at that time was the acting director of the Department of Social Services.
Yes.
And I asked, I quizzed her down, are you planning to negotiate any changes in the contract with the managed care companies regarding, getting paid late? Remember that we had that
right.
whole business. And her answer was, no, we are not going to do that. They are not going to negotiate any change. They will continue to get paid just as per the contract that was, let in October. And so I said, well, when we did the budget, we counted on about $20 million savings by doing that. So, what do you expect to have happen? And her answer basically was, well, we're hoping that our, the numbers come in favorably. Otherwise, they're going to have to ask for it in a supplemental. And I didn't know if you knew that or not.
I did not know that, and that wasn't what we were led to believe during testimony.
Well, this was a question that I had. The department knew that the budget was built on this renegotiation, did
right.
it not? And you had discussions with the department, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And so do you feel that they have reneged on their discussion?
Well, I think we see how this thing plays out and how the rollout actually happens. Supposedly it's all going good. But we still have the option, and a lot of this depends on what happens in Washington. There's a lot of discussion going on right now in Washington as to whether or not they continue funding Medicaid and Medicare the way it's been done in the past, or they give. They're expecting states to take a lot more responsibility for Medicaid. Now, does that mean that we even participate in Medicaid going forward? In other words, we don't have to. We can opt out. But there's a lot up in the air, in my opinion, right now on what happens next year, depending on what Washington does with the budget that the president's proposed.
Well, I have a feeling that we're going to be hit with a $20 million supplemental to cover the shortfall that we will have because of this managed care contract not being renegotiated, as we were led to believe would happen.
Right.
If the governor has made a decision not to renegotiate the contract, you have to ask yourself the question, who would not want that contract renegotiated?
I understand what you're saying.
And it would be the managed care companies, wouldn't it?
Right.
And as we have talked about so many times, we have no way of knowing how much managed care companies have given to the governor, in the form of campaign contributions, dark money contributions, contributions to his inaugural, because he won't release that. And so the process has become even more perverted The process has been, you know, that we're going to have this contract take effect before we even have an appropriation. And as my understanding is, he still has not signed the budget bills. Is that correct?
My understanding, they have not been.
So there still, even to this day, is no appropriation. And now we find out that his department is not even going to do what his department led you to believe that they would do.
Right. Well, all of us
are. Now we're just going to have this big supplemental, and which we have to pay. I mean, there's no way around it.
Well, but I think it also, you know, it wasn't just me misled. I think it was the entire committee with the discussion. And then what becomes important is, okay, what do we do next year? If they don't come up with some of this money, they've kind of promised on the back end of the contract some of the things, then that's a whole new ball game on how we fund or how we go forward. And, you know, if they're extremely efficient and there are savings there, that would be great. If there's not, and Washington backs up on what they appropriate to us to use for Medicaid, then I think we have to evaluate the whole system. I think next year is going to be a really important year in the budget for the state of Missouri. Many states are being squeezed really hard now, and if Washington pulls back too much, we have some really big discussions to have going forward.
Well, thank you for the inquiry. I'm basically very concerned about, you know, the way I think we were taken for a ride.
Well, I think we all should be.
Mr. President?
Senator Buchanan.
To inquire of the senator from Franklin.
Senator Franklin, yield.
I do.
Proceed.
I'm just curious, Senator. You handled the Blue Alert bill.
Yes, I did.
Has the governor signed that bill yet?
Well, I do not believe the version that passed.
Senate, come to order. Just listen to these.
The Senate, I don't believe that made it through the finish line. I think Blue Alert, there was a provision in another bill that went forward. But I'm not familiar whether that was signed or not.
It did make it across the finish line in another bill.
Yes, yeah.
Well, but it was your bill, and so, I mean, one of the bills was yours. And so
yes.
Surely you would know, you would have been invited to any bill signing.
I guess that would, I would assume that, yes.
Yeah, and you haven't been invited, have you?
No, but I haven't invited to any bill signing yet. I did pass some other bills, so I haven't.
No, but as you recall, when the bill came up on the floor, I mean, I talked about managed care, and the governor ran ads through his secret dark money committee, A New Missouri, saying that I was blocking Blue Alert. And it seems to me that if he's going to go to that much trouble to say that I was blocking Blue Alert, that once he had the opportunity to sign the bill, he would do so immediately, don't you think?
I'm not sure where he is at in that process, and I'm not sure exactly if they have people that are pouring through those bills. And I'm not sure to what degree the number of bills he signed at this point, but I would assume that bill would be signed or would get signed pretty soon.
Well, I'm just wondering, since it's on his desk and he hasn't signed it, is he blocking it?
I don't necessarily believe that would be the case, but again, I'm not sure what's holding up the process at this point.
Well, so. I'm just curious. Thank you for the inquiry. Thank you. Mr. President?
Thanks.
Senator Buchanan.
I'd like to inquire the senator from Green, if I may.
Senator from Green, yield.
Sorry, Mr. President. Yes, I do.
Okay, proceed.
Senator.
Morning, Senator.
Good morning. You know, on Tuesday, the governor had a big bus rally where he bused a whole bunch of people here to Jefferson City, and then I saw in the media pictures of him taking the people in a big old line up through his portico and in his special door, and then I saw where he personally took people around to senators' offices, and I saw where they actually fed the people that were riding on the bus. You know, I guess they fed them some pizza or something.
I didn't hear about that, but I was familiar with the rally. I'd been aware.
Well, you know, this raises some questions for me, and it might raise some questions for you. I know it does. Like, for example, why is it that the governor can take his people that he bust in through his secret special door and bypass security when my constituents and everybody that I have has to go through the metal detector?
That's a good question. My staff has to go through the metal detectors, too. It's a good question, Senator.
Everybody has to go through the metal detector. I mean, and I'm wondering if there are any dark guns that could, you know, come into the Capitol, kind of like, you know, dark voting, dark money, dark guns.
I see what you're saying.
You know, now we know that a person can just go into the governor's side door and he can just bring in 150, 250 people, because it is a variable number that you have reported. One article said 150, another one said 250. But that's a lot of people coming in bypassing security, don't you think?
Well, and I don't know if those folks were wanded at any point or if there was security set up. I'm sure there's a record of that, that, you know, if someone's interested in that, they could take a look. But it's a good question that you raised, Senator.
Well, you know, another question that I would have would be feeding the people that were paid for by a New Missouri. It was reported, and I think they quoted Austin Chambers as saying that a New Missouri paid for all the buses and that they paid to feed those people.
Okay.
So if a New Missouri paid to feed the people pizza that he bussed in to lobby, what would be the difference between that and a lobbyist paying for the pizza that, say, I fed to a bunch of school kids?
Well, I didn't know you were going to ask me that question, but it brings to mind something that I told the Springfield News Leader a number of years ago when they asked me about the total amount of lobbyist gifts to me in one particular year. And I pointed out to them that on a number of occasions, I would approach lobbyists and say, by the way, I have a school group of fourth graders coming to the Capitol. Is there any way you would buy pizza for them so that the school doesn't have to do it? And every time I asked, the lobbyist or group of lobbyists would agree to provide pizza or whatever it was for these school students. And, of course, that had to be reported as a gift to me, and it ran my numbers up. But that's okay. I felt it was a good cause. So I didn't know you were going to ask me that, but it's a good question.
Well, you know, I did some looking on the Internet, and I pulled up the section of law regarding legislative lobbyists. And it says, basically, any natural person who acts for the purpose of attempting to influence the taking, passage, amendment, delay, or defeat of any official action on any bill, resolution, amendment, nomination, appointment, report, or any other action or any other matter pending or proposed in a legislative committee in either house of the General Assembly or in any matter which may be subject of action by the General Assembly and in connection with such activity meets the requirements of any one of the following. And then it says makes total expenditures of $50 or more. Well, the bottom line of it is a New Missouri is a lobbyist principal because their money is being spent to try to affect us today in our deliberations on House Bill 1.
I see what you're saying. I think the way, and I haven't read all of that that you mentioned, but...
Mr. President, could...
Senator Buchanan?
Having a hard time hearing, if you could.
Senate will come to order. Proceed, Senators.
When you read that, I was reminded of the difference there between a citizen coming and lobbying their own legislator, for example, and then someone doing it for compensation. And there is a difference that's spelled out in the law. But of note, you might find this interesting. I was watching a series. Of course, I've heard that part of the reason lobbyists got their name in this country was because during the administration of President Grant, people who wanted the various representatives of this interests around the nation would hang out in a particular hotel in Washington, and occasionally President Grant would go over and sit in the lobby of the hotel, and they earned the moniker lobbyist. Now, that's one version of the origin of that name. The other one I heard about in a documentary on the British parliamentary system this weekend, or I'm sorry, it was last weekend, rather, and it was the center hall between the House of Commons and the House of Lords is referred to as the lobby there in Westminster. And that was the place, and still is, that citizens could go and contact their MP, their member of parliament. And, of course, the House of Commons is the ones that, in the UK, they are elected by the people. The House of Lords, they are the aristocracy appointed for life by the Crown. And so the citizens would go and contact, and still can, their MP in the lobby, and they refer to that as lobbying their MP. So maybe there's more than one origin. It's still the same concept, but if there's compensation and somebody's doing it for you, the voters of Missouri have decided that they should register for that, and there are certain regulations that we've all agreed that they must follow.
Well, as best as I can tell, under the law, if the entity called A New Missouri is trying to influence legislation, which they clearly are, they have run robocalls and ads against the senator from Butler and the senator from St. Francois, and against me on another issue, but they are clearly trying to influence legislation. And technically, they should designate a lobbyist. And it would naturally fall to Austin Chambers to be that lobbyist. And so I asked, has Austin Chambers registered as a lobbyist? And the answer is no, he has not.
Okay.
Nor has anyone registered as a lobbyist for the entity, A New Missouri. Now, I contend that somebody, probably Austin Chambers, should have registered as a lobbyist. And being a lobbyist, Austin Chambers, or whoever is their lobbyist, should file lobbyist reports on how much money is being expended and for what purpose, with regard to lobbying us on the bill that's before us.
Well, now, I would not want to presume what a court of justice might say in the matter.
Or what the Ethics Commission would say.
But I will say this. Yeah, because the Ethics Commission would adjudicate something like that. But you cannot have liberty without justice. They are mutually beneficial. You have to have one in order to truly have the other. And so, obviously, the essence of that is we all follow the same laws that we agree upon. No one is above the law. Not you, not me, not any member of the legislature, no one that is a member of the judicial branch, and certainly no one who is a member of the executive branch or, as you said, lobbies or whatever they do. But I guess it behooves us to know the statutes, to know what the Constitution says. And I was in your office the other day, and I was taken by you got your Constitution out, and I was taken by something. Your copy of the Constitution looked kind of like my granny's old Bible. It was worn and taped and tattered. Pages were falling out. And so I thank you for that, Senator, because I can tell you read it.
You know, I hate to admit this, But I think you might have been looking at former Senator Lemke's
Well, just take the compliment, Senator. It's in the same office, so you've
mine,
got
mine
you've
does
got good
have a
counsel.
Lot of notes and stuff written on it. However, I mean, I got marks, but
you know,
but
and
not
we can,
as bad
we
as
can,
that.
We but. Can disagree on the interpretation, even here on this floor. But it goes back to the point I was making a few weeks ago. We're all here to serve the people. We're all here for good purposes and for good reason. And I think every member of this body, certainly, and I think every member of the House, the folks I've talked to, they have good intentions, and I appreciate what you do.
Well, I want to get back to, for a moment, the pizza that the governor served all of the people who came on Tuesday and the bus rides that he gave all those people on Tuesday.
Okay.
Now, if you brought a group of school kids in and the lobbyist group paid for the school kids' pizza, that would be reported as a gift to you, wouldn't it?
It has been reported as a gift to me before.
Now, you would
I guess
that,
it kind of goes
point,
to, you if would, you want a slice, pay the price, you know?
Yeah. You would have an option of writing a check to pay for that, but
right.
if you didn't do that, it would be a gift to you.
There have been times that I've done things like that out of my campaign account. I had that option. That is also reported to the Missouri Ethics Commission.
Now, as I read the Missouri statute, if a lobbyist makes an expenditure on behalf of a public official, an elected official, it has to be reported as a gift.
That's correct.
So if a new Missouri, through Austin Chambers, buys pizza on behalf of the governor, that has to be reported as a gift to the governor. But wait!
Well,
wait. The governor has issued an executive order saying that nobody in the executive branch will receive a gift. I forgot. Yeah, so that couldn't be that.
Well,
I'm being
thought
sarcastic.
Of one thing. You pointed out who this reported, and I didn't know we were going to have this conversation, so I'm just going to tell you what's on my mind here briefly so we can move on. But you mentioned gift reporting. It, you know, as far as influencing legislation, every one of the departments that might come over and lobby the legislature for legislation, they have legislative liaisons. Then they are tasked with lobbying the legislature, and they must report, they must register with the Missouri Ethics Commission as an executive branch lobbyist under Chapter 105. So it's much the same thing as far as influencing legislation. I would agree with you now that I think of that part of it. And if they're going to do that, you know, it's one thing for a group to do campaign activities. That's not lobbying. If you're advocating for the election of a candidate, that is different, and that falls under a different section of law. If we don't like the law, fine, let's change it. But until we do, we got to follow it. The activities you're talking about, if there's compensation involved over $50, they are supposed to register.
Well, it was reported in the media.
I mean, I don't see how else to read it.
It was reported in the media that a new Missouri paid for the cost of transporting all those people here, and that they were fed. So it is my belief that that would have been a gift to the governor. So the governor has a choice. He can either accept a gift, when, by the way, he issued an executive order saying that nobody in his administration would accept a gift, or he can personally reimburse a new Missouri, you know, for the cost of the gift that a new Missouri paid for all that transportation and food, don't you think?
It would stand to reason. I haven't thought about it in depth.
It would stand to reason.
Again, I wouldn't want to presume what a court of justice or the Missouri Ethics Commission might decide on the matter. I've not spoken with them, and I don't intend to myself. But, you know, it's... I am concerned that, to put it as frankly as I can, we're not working together. I think we can get a whole lot more done when we work together. And I think most Missourians would agree with that. You know, I saw some comments about dark voting over the weekend, and I just thought, you know, we don't vote in secret in here. And that's really the issue.
But maybe
it's not about
it's
not about the ballot box. If we're talking about the legislative process, the public, and this is Constitution here, when we third read a bill, we are required by the Missouri Constitution to have a public vote in here. And that is why we have disclosure. You know, it used to be in the legislature, not that long ago, that committee meetings, executive sessions in committee meetings were secret. And everybody was made to leave the room. The vote was not recorded. Those things have changed, and I think it's for the better because it's sunlight. But the Missouri Constitution has always said, at least since the 45 edition, I haven't checked the 1875 one, that public votes, that third read votes in either house of the legislature are to be a recorded vote. We don't vote in secret.
That's right. You know, you remember the case of Ron Calzone. Ron Calzone is involved in litigation.
Yes.
And the Ethics Commission held that Ron Calzone is a lobbyist. Now, he's not paid, but the entity that he comes down and talks to us on behalf of, or not necessarily on behalf of, but he's related to them.
He always, and I'm not trying to defend him, let me be very, very clear, but he does always say when he testifies, I'm here as a private citizen.
Right,
so
he does.
I will at least grant him that. I don't know that I agree with his assessment.
But the point of it is that here is this entity, and Ron Calzone comes down, and he's not even paid by the entity, and the Ethics Commission is holding that he's a lobbyist. Well, Austin Chambers is paid by a New Missouri, so I am contending that Austin Chambers is for sure a lobbyist.
Well, I see where you're going, and that's
Now the point that
I would call that an open question for them to decide,
right.
Not me.
So here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that now that I know this, now that I put this out, that when I see ads run against my fellow senators, I'm not going to just sit and take it anymore. I'm going to immediately draft a complaint to the Ethics Commission, and I'm going to say, I want to know who the lobbyist is for them. They need to register as a lobbyist. I need to know how much money is being spent here, and I want the law to be followed, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And in fact, if somebody else doesn't do it, I'm going to file a complaint against Austin Chambers for not registering as a lobbyist for a New Missouri, if he's the head of a New Missouri. Because if he's lobbying the legislature, he ought to register.
Well,
and,
Senator,
and if the New Missouri is giving the governor a gift by paying for the people to be transported and being fed, then by gollies, I want Austin Chambers to report that as a gift to the governor.
Well,
and if the governor wants to write a check, that'd be fine.
My only recommendation, Senator, is that you don't do what I did. I would recommend making sure you get his name right, and it sounds like you are. But
No. I mean, like during the session, I had a New Missouri doing robocalls and putting out social media ads against me.
Well,
as well as the other two senators here.
And that was not campaign related. That was legislative issue related.
Legislative
you are correct
issue
about
related.
That. I know we've talked about this before, but I think it was beyond the pale that your personal cell phone number was released. That is on the verge of a security issue. But, you know, as you pointed out, security apparently doesn't mean anything, and we just got this new security January 20th. Or no, it wasn't January 20th. That's when the federal administration changed. We got it the day the administration changed here.
You know, we talked about how the security is full of holes, that guns could be brought into the Capitol, like passed in through a window or something, and that making people go through the little metal detector just doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, now we have the cardinal example of that. The governor can just let people in through his back door.
Well, I feel safer with concealed carry anyway, but that's another issue for another day. Senator, I really appreciate your thoughtfulness.
Well, I appreciate you.
We've talked a little bit. The only thing I would say is keep going through that tattered copy of the Constitution. I appreciate what you do.
Thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I have one order of business. I'd ask unanimous consent to go back. We have to approve one more journal, read the journal for the 22nd. If I could have unanimous consent, all in favor, to move back in the order of business, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Madam Secretary, read the journal for May 22nd, 2012, which is a technical session.
Journal of the Senate, 99th General Assembly of the State of Missouri, first extra session of the first regular session, first day,
Senator
Monday.
Senator Cole.
President, I move that further reading of the May 22nd journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
The Senator McCole moves for the what did you move for, Senator?
Further reading of the journal be dispensed with.
And the same. I'm new to this job, you understand. All in favor of the motion, say
does
aye.
Does any senator need to be heard?
Senator like to be heard? Thank you, Senator McCole.
Thank you.
All in favor of the wave of the journal, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Thank you. Now we're back on introduction of guests. Senator from Lewis. Yeah, sure. Okay, now we're on order of introduction of guests. Is that, of course, you can make an inquiry, but I recognize you first. Go ahead, Senator from Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Since he was on a topic, I'd like to continue that for just briefly. Senator, you yield? I don't.
Senator from, who did you inquire of?
Senator from Buchanan.
Senator Buchanan, yield.
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I was listening to your inquiry earlier, and you mentioned a person that you said the Ethics Commission claimed to be a lobbyist, Ron Calzone.
No, Ron Calzone had an ethics complaint filed against him and claiming that he should register as a lobbyist, and the Ethics Commission came down and said that he was a lobbyist, and Ron has appealed that, and there is currently litigation pending on that. But Ron said that he should not be a lobbyist because he doesn't receive any remuneration as a person working for this entity, so therefore he shouldn't be a lobbyist. And I think the court is going to rule on that. But the difference here is that Austin Chambers
He has never registered as a lobbyist. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And I know earlier in your conversation you implied that just because some person influences legislation or a group influences legislation, they should be required to register as a lobbyist or if they have some...
No, not the group.
You did say that if they try to influence legislation.
Yeah, according to the definition of lobbyist, if you're trying to affect pending legislation, then you are a lobbyist as long as you meet one of four criteria. And the four criteria are outlined in Chapter 105.
Senator, are you familiar with the group called Missouri Rural Crisis Center?
Missouri Rural Crisis Center. I've heard of it.
I'm sure you have.
Huh?
They've left flyers in a lot of offices.
Okay.
Do you know if they have a registered lobbyist?
I have no idea.
But you do know that they do try to influence legislation.
You're holding in your hand a sheet that looks to me like it's trying to influence legislation.
And I'm sure you have had some of these in your office, have you not?
I probably have. I can't tell you because I don't remember the names of everybody who comes through, but it sounds familiar to me.
I think it probably should. They've been here for many years, and I believe they have a person that's in the Capitol quite often, but I don't believe he's ever registered as a lobbyist, and I don't believe this group has ever had anybody register as a lobbyist.
Well,
does that sound fair?
It doesn't to me. It sounds to me like anybody who tries to influence legislation should have somebody registering as a lobbyist if they expend more than $50.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't say how much this costs. I don't know as we can find out because they're not registered, so they're not required to report anything. So it's kind of dark money to me, Senator, but I appreciate the inquiry.
You're welcome.
Senator 14th, raise your eyes.
I would like to inquire of the Senator from Green.
Senator from Green. Do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Did I say good morning? I usually say good morning.
No, you didn't. I was going to say good morning, but then I thought, I better say
good morning. My local mail carrier always says good morning. His father, who was a mail carrier, always says good morning. So I have adopted it, and I always say good morning. So I didn't know what I said. In any case, I wanted to talk to you about something that happened during session.
Yes.
And I'm not trying to pick on you, but you and I had a great engagement, a conversation, trying to save people's lives.
Yes, we did.
And unfortunately, the last day of session, I truly saw the compassion in your heart as well as other senators. But something disturbed me in the last couple of days of session. And I want to read to you a text message that I got from a lobbyist talking about another lobbyist in the gallery. So as we are trying to pass the home buyout bill in the Bridgeton area, as you're helping out, as other senators are helping out, as we're trying to do the best job that we can, there is a lobbyist who was standing right up in the gallery, and he made what I would call a racial slur that other people heard. Now, I know that another senator in this body was called out of her name recently as well. And I just wanted to make the point, it's never good when you're working, and no matter how hard your job may be, it is not appropriate to call people out of their names. And especially when they hear about you calling them out of their name. Now, I can't say what the lobbyist's name is. I can't say that, but I can tell you that his father was a judge.
Okay.
And I can also tell you that this person who has been in this building for quite a long time should know better than to call people out of their name. So I went as far as calling one of the contracts that this lobbyist has, the Cardinals. So I talked to Ron Waterman, and I told Ron Waterman exactly what this lobbyist who represents the Cardinals said. I told him what he said. And he told me, I will call, give me a couple of days, I will call you back. I want to confirm on the other side. Mm-hmm. That was, I guess, the Tuesday before last, after session ended. By the way, the father's name is Judge Barger, so you should know who the lobbyist is. So the lobbyist who called me out of my name in the gallery right up there, with other lobbyists and other people hearing, do you want to hear what he called me?
Senator, I'm always happy to talk or listen.
Yeah, so let me tell you exactly. It was 2:47 in the afternoon when he called me out of my name. And this is the text message that I got as Judge Barger's son calls me out of my name in the gallery. I'm going to read this to you. And he says, I just heard one of the lobbyists talking about you. Just moved. Back to this. I just heard one of the lobbyists talking about you. He said, Puerto Rican voodoo doll, up here in the rear gallery. And I said, who? What did they say? And he said the first person's name, said he had a Puerto Rican voodoo doll around his neck.
Ouch.
That's what he said. This is Judge Barger's son. Now, what had been going on is the passage of Senate Bill 22. And I'm glad that the senator from the 34th was talking about ethics, because one of the things that will not be reflected on the Missouri ethics page is the fact that this lobbyist, as well as other lobbyists, were working on behalf of Republic Services. Now, when you look at their principal list, all you see is Lathrop and Gage. Lathrop and Gage also has some kind of issue with the whole buyout thing because they don't want to admit that there's radioactive waste, and it became some lawsuit thing, which I'm not getting involved, or I had not been getting involved in. Now I'm trying to make the liability huge, because I know all the different places, as I've been doing my discovery work, where there's radioactive waste outside of the slabs, the St. Louis Airport Project site, outside of the landfill. There are other places where there's radioactive waste. And I also recently found someone who worked for the predecessor of the Cotter Corporation as well, who said basically, and for anybody who represents St. Louis County, especially the newly developed areas in St. Louis County, the quote from this employee was this: "We used to dump that stuff everywhere in neighborhoods that had not been established." So what I'm doing this summer, instead of trying to buy out 130 homes, I am going to actively and aggressively try to increase the liability for the Cotter Corporation and Exelon, Republic Services. So that's what I'm going to do. Now, I don't like, I'm marrying the two issues, because the reason I guess the son of Judge Barger got so irate is because he did not think that Senate Bill 22 would make it past all of the bureaucracy you have over there in the House. So I don't think he knew that it would pass out of the Budget Committee. I don't think he thought it would pass out of the Rules Committee. And then when it passed out of the last committee, the Fiscal Review Committee, he called, what's his name, Russ Naki, immediately, because we had people around this lobbyist reporting back to me exactly who he calls. So immediately when it passed 13-0, he gets on the phone and he calls Russ Naki, who happens to be the person who communicates on behalf of Republic Services. So again, when you go to Missouri Ethics, you don't see this lobbyist putting down Republic Services at all. And here's why everyone in this room should care, because there are billions of dollars that are supposed to be coming to St. Louis for this cleanup. Like, literally, if you don't care about a person's life, if you don't care, let's just say you have a cold heart, let's just say you don't care, at bare minimum, the billions of, look at Apache Flats. For example, everything that's happening right now in Bridgeton, as the EPA is pushing back, they've pushed back for 70 years on this thing. Actually, less than that, because they were only established in the 80s or 70s. But they have not done their job. They don't want to do their job. And any time there is just a remote possibility that they're going to be discovered, they'll do everything in their mind to cover up. So that's one of the reasons why I'm asking Scott Pruitt to fire everyone at the EPA Region 7. Fire all of them. All of them. You know, I'm a Democrat, but if the Republicans in D.C. are saying clean up the swamp, start at EPA Region 7. And I'm pretty sure, getting back to Judge Barger's son, who is a lobbyist here, you know, I started off with the Cardinals when I called Ron Waterman. I started off with the Cardinals because a lot of the lobbyists, and I hope that the Post-Dispatch is listening, a lot of the legislators who end up getting favors or whatever go to the ballpark. I've gone to the ballpark. And guess who I went through? I went through Judge Barger's son, who's a lobbyist. And so I'm sure when you sign contracts, when lobbyists sign contracts with different companies or different entities, they also have to sign some kind of disclosure or something that says you will not offend the people who you're supposed to be working with. I don't appreciate being called, having part of my heritage coming from his mouth. He knows where my family comes from. I know that he plays golf where my family comes from. I know that. We talk about that all the time. So at a very critical moment when he is standing in that upper gallery where people can hear him, and he calls me at 2:47 in the afternoon, a Puerto Rican voodoo doll, and the reason why I'm talking about the Cardinals is because if one racial issue thing comes up, and they did not do anything with the son of Judge Berger, if they did not do anything, this is on record of them not doing anything when it comes to people who are disrespected, people who are demeaned. I do not appreciate being called out of my name like that. If you want to, say it in my face, and I'll have way more respect for you. Way more respect.
Well, Senator, let me... I don't want to interrupt you. Were you done?
No, I needed to take a breath.
Okay. Well, a couple of thoughts. First of all, I must say, I did not hear it. However, if that was said, it's extremely troubling. And I'm sure that if it was said, that the message that you are attempting, the appropriate message that you're attempting to deliver here has probably been received. And if it did occur, I hope that that made right to you. You know, one of the things that...
No apology, no nothing. No apology at all.
But needs to be made right, whatever that is. Like I say, I wasn't there, so I don't
know. I'm increasing the liability for these folks who are responsible for people getting sick in Missouri. That's what I'm doing.
I understand. But I'd like to, if you don't mind, maybe speak to the larger issue of respect and honor that you referenced. And I want to say... it's an honor to serve with you. It was an honor to work alongside you on the last day of session as we went to the House. And I am moved by, and I have to say, that I have rarely seen, if ever, a colleague in the House or the Senate work as tirelessly for an issue and with as such compassion as you have on this issue over the last couple of years, several years. And I was very proud of the Missouri Senate to, although we might disagree on the details of the remedy, I was very proud of our colleagues in this body to stand with you and send something out of this chamber to the House and keep that moving. And I was very disappointed.
And you know what? I do have to thank everybody as well.
Yes.
I would spend more time talking about the House and what some of the members said, who I gave them an opportunity, just like I did everyone here, to learn about the issue in my office or in their office or whatever. And some of the smartest people I know in the House, some of the smartest, said the dumbest thing on the last day of session.
And there were some that you and I spoke with that were very helpful. There's,
yes, absolutely.
There are, and I just want to honor those people because it is a credit to your compassion and your drive on this issue. Regardless of the details of the remedy, the fact that a senator in the minority party, super minority party, would gain the respect
and minority
and the,
within that minority.
Yes.
Don't get that right.
To gain the respect and the camaraderie of colleagues to say, this is important to the Senate enough that we're going to send it to the House. I wish the House would have kept it moving. We worked on that, and it was an honor to work beside you on that last day of session. I was as disappointed as others. I know I wasn't as disappointed as you because you have put hours into this. I've been in your office, and we've talked about this. I've looked at the pictures. I know your passion for getting the EPA involved. They should have done it a long time ago.
And you know what? The thing is, those are the folks in EPA Region 7. They just need to go. I mean, they just really, really need to go. They're murderers. I mean, the EPA Region 7, they're murderers at this point because they're allowing people to get sick and die. And I'm not, I made a commitment, and I'm going to stick with my commitment. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. But I'm just going to be really truthful. So there are a couple of things that I'm going to file. I think I want to follow up with the senator from Buchanan and talk about some laws we need to pass dealing with lobbyists to make sure we know who they're representing. I mean, and the thing is, there's been this rumor for some years about, and I don't have to talk about it really, but I want to make a point.
Sure.
Like, had that statement not been made, you know, I would have been on a different course.
Sure.
I'd totally been on a different course. But because that statement, that terribly discriminatory statement was made, you know, maybe I want to talk about the fact that there are rumors out there talking about where the cocaine comes from in the politically elite. You know, that may be a conversation I want to talk about on the floor.
Let me just offer this. I think we should, it is my belief that if there's been wrongdoing, we should not repay it with wrongdoing, but we should set a good example of what they should have done in the first place.
I am going to work on behalf of these citizens to increase the liability of this corporation and the federal government who have ignored their liability for such a long time. That's what I'm going to do. Thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator, as always.
Senator McCalloway, what reason do you rise?
Introduce a very special guest.
Proceed.
That special guest is not in the chamber at the moment, but I wanted to introduce the senator from Barton and wish him well on his happy birthday today.
Everybody in the chamber, would they wish the senator from Barton a happy birthday today? Happy birthday, Senator from Barton. Senator from 23rd, what reason do you rise?
To inquire from the senator from the 15th, Mr. President.
Senator from the 15th. Sergeant Arms. Senator 15th, yield for inquiry.
Yeah, is it the 23rd or who I'm inquiring to?
From the Senator from the 23rd.
That's what I thought. All right.
Okay, does that mean you
yes,
are
I
accepting?
Do.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I wasn't sure if you were going to accept that for a second there, Senator.
I yeah, well, I was out there and
just wanted to make sure you knew where the bullets were coming from.
Yeah.
I wanted to take some time to discuss the reason for this special session being called. That is House Bill 1. The reason I want to take some time to discuss this is tomorrow, as my understanding under the latest schedule, we're going to be hearing HB 1 on the floor of the Senate tomorrow. Now, tomorrow is Friday, the Friday before Memorial Day. So a lot of times, we've seen this session. Somehow we end up in these heated debates or exciting debates the day before a major holiday. So I don't want, in an effort to reduce the burden on everyone leaving town, I thought maybe we could hash out some of these issues on the floor this afternoon. Does that sound all right?
Sure.
Well, specifically, House Bill 1 is a bill that authorizes the PSC to offer a discounted rate to the operation of a smelter or steel mill in the southeastern portion of the state. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
And I have a copy of House Bill 1 in its current format. Now, I should remind the members of the body, of course, that this is going to be going into committee here shortly, and we're not expecting any changes to occur in committee, so everything we say is with a grain of salt. Now, you and I have talked about this because whenever we see deals like this come up before, we're always concerned that these may be a form of corporate welfare.
And yeah, I mean, there's always a concern of shifting costs to ratepayers. You know, I certainly wouldn't want to pass something that would allow basically a subsidy to a steel mill or an aluminum smelter. If they're providing energy at below cost and then they have to shift that to ratepayers, I think that's a bad deal.
Because we shouldn't be giving, and again, I think that the message we've gotten from the governor is genuine and honorable. I think the message that we've gotten from the House has the right intention. The problem is, a lot of times when government gets in the role of picking winners and losers, by offering a special deal to certain citizens or certain businesses that not everybody else gets, you create imbalances in the free market system that ultimately hurts everyone. Now, in this case, the easiest way to lay this out, as I understand it, is that if you are a company that is trying to get a service rate, you're setting up service, you pay what we'll call the market rate. That's what everybody pays, you know, as a constituent or as a ratepayer, what have you. You pay the market rate. There is a level between that market rate and zero, which would be considered the fixed cost level of Ameren's service.
That's correct.
Now, we're discussing whether or not we should authorize the PSC to give any customer. Mr. President, I'm having a hard time hearing. Can we call for a little order?
The Senate come to order. Let's allow the members to enter in debate. Continue. Three senators on the floor. Senator Webster, what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Introducing a special guest, I think we're still in that order of business, aren't we, Mr. President?
Proceed.
Okay. Without objection. Mr. President, on your right, seated, which I will ask them to stand, and on my left, I have some people here today from the Ozark Mennonite Church that journeyed up here from my district and would like for the Senate to make them feel welcome. I'd like to introduce Melissa, Joanna, Jewel, William, and Caleb. We would like the body to make them feel welcome, please.
Will the Senate make the guests of the Senator from Webster feel welcome, and thanks for coming. Okay, Senators, proceed in your debate.
Senator, as I was saying, we are here to discuss whether or not the PSC should give a discount off the market rates, and if so, perhaps how much of a discount?
Yeah, I think there's two different rates. There may be rates that consumers pay, and there's going to be a different scale based on how large of a consumer you are. And then there's also the market rate that Ameren might sell their excess energy out to other states. And rate is substantially lower than maybe, an Ameren consumer would pay.
Right. So I want to be clear that if the discount that is offered to this company goes below the fixed cost of Ameren, which could be defined by, as you're saying, the out-of-state carriers that they're selling to. If it goes below that fixed cost, Ameren will be able to recoup that cost on the backs of the other ratepayers that they have.
Right.
So I want to make that clear to the body, what I just said right there. So I see that a lot of conversations are going on. What that means is if Ameren sets a rate, or if the PSC authorizes a discount below the fixed cost of what Ameren pays to provide that service, all the other ratepayers that are associated with Ameren and get service from Ameren will pay the difference.
Right.
So if you're a constituent, if you're a resident living somewhere in St. Louis, because Ameren serves the St. Louis. In fact, in my district, all of my constituents are either directly served by Ameren or they are indirectly served by Ameren through another co-op. So it's all that comes from the same place. And if the PSC is allowed to authorize a rate below that fixed cost, every one of my constituents will pay for that difference. Every one of them. Everyone that gets power through Ameren. Is that how you understand that?
Yeah, that's my understanding. From an area that isn't even in Ameren's territory.
Exactly. So we don't know what may happen with any potential smelter, what may happen with a steel mill. And I certainly, as the governor mentioned, if we want to talk about jobs, I'm certainly interested about talking about jobs at any point. I think every member of the body is interested about talking about jobs. I would say, though, that getting away from the corporate welfare model, which again is offering a great deal for one company.
If you have a business model that mm-hmm. only works by getting millions of dollars in subsidies from ratepayers, mm-hmm. that's not a viable business model.
And actually, that's a good segue, Senator, because now my next question is, if my constituents were being asked to foot this bill, to make up this difference, what would they be being asked to spend? Well, As I understand it, based on the friendly folks over at Ameren, Noranda's energy cost per year was about $160 million. $160 million is what Noranda was paying. Now, there is a certain amount of difference between what they were paying and what the fixed cost of Ameren would have been, but somewhere between zero and $160 million is what all the other ratepayers are going to be asked to subsidize per year. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And offering that deal to the boot heel, which I empathize to for the benefit of potentially 500 jobs at the expense of 1.2 million Ameren customers, including every one of my constituents, that's a concern for me. Now, the good news is there's a way to fix this. There's a way that everybody can be a winner in this discussion. And that is, we authorize the PSC to offer a discount for the smelter, for the potential steel mill, but not allow them to go below the fixed cost of Ameren service. Do you agree with that, Senator?
I agree, sure.
Now, I don't have I'm not on the Commerce Committee, so I can't be a part of the discussion. But I can tell you that it is my intention to offer such an amendment tomorrow. Not because I'm holding back in trying to support the folks down in the Boot Heel, but because it is my job to protect my constituents from having to pay for the cost of special deals around the state.
Sure.
Do you concur with that?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, very good. Well, Senator, again, I appreciate that. I'm going to do some other quick inquiries with other folks that are in the Ameren district so that they understand what's going on here as well, and so that we're somewhat prepared for this discussion tomorrow as we get in the holiday rush that we all want to get out of here. But I appreciate it. Did you have any questions or concerns you wanted to bring up, Senator?
I don't think so. I think you laid it out perfectly.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Senator. I appreciate the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from 23rd.
To inquire from the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator Buchanan, yield. Proceed.
Senator, were you listening during that inquiry I did with the senator from the 15th?
I did.
Did it make sense to you in how I laid out how we may be making some of our, or all of our constituents in our case, liable for a special deal that we're giving out to a certain part of the state?
Absolutely.
Do you agree that this is a form of corporate welfare?
Beyond any shadow of a doubt, Senator. Well, Senator, I just noticed these tweets that I would like to read to you from Tony Messenger.
I love tweets.
Which I just got them a few moments ago.
I love tweets.
It says, first of all, it says, I have confirmed the company negotiating with Eric Greitens for potential Southeast Missouri steel mill is Sumangala Steel, based in Chennai, India. That's the first one. Second one says, via email, quote, our consultants are in an advanced stage of shortlisting various potential sites, of which Southeast Missouri is one of them. And then thirdly, the idea that Missouri legislature would pass incentives without actually knowing who is getting them is truly absurd. Now they know. And then the last one is, it's called reporting. I kind of thought that was kind of cool. So now we know. It's Sumangala Steel Company in Chennai, India. That's who it is.
One of the things I would add to that, Senator, is that you're right. We did not know the identity. But more than that, without setting parameters and limits on the amount of discount that we can offer, we don't know how much this is actually going to cost. So we don't know who ultimately it's going to go to, but we also don't know how much good it's going to cost. And the cost is going to be borne, forgive me, Senator, but I don't know, you don't have any Ameren customers.
There are some in my district, I think.
Oh, there are, okay.
I'm not for sure. Probably not, though. I'm thinking about it, probably not.
But you can see from what my perspective, where all of my constituents are directly or indirectly
And you know the
tied to Ameren, that's a big concern.
The key words in House Bill 1, the House Committee substitute, are the following. After approval of the special rate, and they get the approval rate if, after approval of the special rate, the Commission allocates in each general rate proceeding of the electrical corporation serving the facility the reduced revenues from the special rate as compared to the revenues that would have been generated at the rate the facility would have paid without the special rate, to the electrical corporation's other customers through a uniform percentage adjustment of all components of the base rates of all customer classes. Now, we have been told that Noranda used as much power as the city of Springfield. I've heard that...
50 megawatts.
50 megawatts, right? I've been told that multiple times. That's a lot of power. Now, how much does it cost in power to light up the city of Springfield for a year? 50 million, maybe? I mean, I'm just guessing. So if this is to save, let's just say, 10 million of that, that basically means that they have to jack up everybody in Ameren Services Area's rate by enough to recoup the 10 million. But it could be 50 million. It could be 100 million. We don't know how much it is.
And those other customers that the bill refers to, those other customers, those are my constituents.
Yeah,
every single one of my constituents falls under that category.
Right. They're going to be paying more for their electricity, including the little old lady down the street from you. She's going to be paying more so that Chumangala, whatever it is, steel company, can get subsidized. And the whole purpose here is to put 400 people in Portageville or somewhere down there to work.
And Senator, first, I would like to say about that, I empathize. The folks down in the Boot Heel are in a difficult position. And it is very difficult to understand where they're coming from when we're not in their shoes. So I want to say I empathize with the folks down there. However, as difficult as it is to say, we could not set state policy to benefit the few based on the backs of most of the constituents of the state. And this bill, in its current format, has the possibility of placing the burden of up to $160 million a year on the backs of 1.2 million customers of Ameren in the state of Missouri.
Well, I just have to say that when I read Tony Messenger's tweet, which I'm going to reread what he said, he's quoting the Sumangala Steel reply to him. He says, quote, "Our consultants are in an advanced stage of shortlisting various potential sites, one of which, Southeast Missouri, is one of them." Of which Southeast Missouri is one of them. In other words, they're looking at multiple sites, and they're in advanced stage of shortlisting. So this isn't any like done deal here. Mm-hmm. This is a big question mark.
Right.
You know, is this like really going to happen? And here we are contemplating jacking up the rates on everybody in Ameren Service Area in order to give this Indian company a special deal.
That's correct.
And it's just inherently wrong to do that.
I agree.
I mean, like, why don't we have language that says that whatever the rate that they get can't be below their cost of providing the service,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then don't raise up everybody else's rate. See, here's the thing.
Senator,
you know, when we had Boeing, when we had Aerotropolis, when we had Ford, we offered tax credits. Well, the thing about tax credits is, like, if I give you a tax credit, it doesn't cost everybody else in the room money. You just don't pay the tax, right? I mean, like there is no compensatory increase in my tax when I give you a tax credit. You understand that?
Yes.
Okay. So if we were to give Sumangala Steel Company a tax credit, it wouldn't cost the little old lady down the street in your district. But given that what we're doing is giving them a special rate and allocating the loss in revenue to everyone else, it is going to cost the little old lady down the street. And that's why I think we should abandon this whole thing with regard to this special rate, and we should just give the Sumangala a tax credit. Don't you think?
Well, I'm not a fan of corporate welfare in any of its forms, Senator.
Well, I mean, just to say, if you're going to do something, you know, this is the worst possible way to do it.
Well, I would tell you, and I appreciate that, Senator, and I'll close, because there's some other senators that want to weigh in on this issue. I'll close by saying we can fix this bill by ensuring that it doesn't, the discount doesn't go below the cost of service. And if the discount doesn't go below the cost of service for Ameren, then there will be no reimbursement by the other ratepayers. Thank you,
Thank
Senator.
You. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from 23rd. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, the Senator from 23rd. For the benefit of the body, Kyle Oster from ABC 17 KMIZ, as well as Elisa Nelson from Missouri Net, have been granted permission to take photos and video in the Senate chamber today.
Senator from 23rd, will raise your eyes.
Fire from the Senator from the 24th.
Senator from 24th, yield. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. Good afternoon.
How are you?
I am good. I am good.
I realized what you were trying to ask me, and yes, 24th.
So. I just wanted to make sure I didn't say the wrong number. We might.
Oh, I appreciate
might
that.
Might be. And that's actually. I should know this. You're right. My neighbor. You're my neighbor right next door. So I thought it was 24, but this is our first inquiry.
I escorted you down the center aisle when you were sworn in here as a senator.
That's right.
So, yes.
I don't know what I've lost my mind, Senator. You've expressed an interest in this particular issue. I've kind of laid out where I stand on this issue. What's your take on this?
Well, you know, I have really mixed emotions about this. I mean, I think that all of us here in the chamber probably come from a place where job creation is critical. I mean, that's just such an important part of what we want to do. And if we're able to help in that regard, then we like to provide that support. The question is, at what cost, and who has skin in the game, and what protections have we put into place for those ratepayers who will have skin in the game? And I think that the senator from the 15th mentioned the fact that this area is not in Ameren's service area, the area where the smelter would be brought back up and where the steel mill will take place. So the people who live there, who would be benefiting most directly from jobs created, will not be investing as ratepayers in your district and mine would have to.
That is a good point, Senator. So you're saying, I just want to make sure I got this, that Ameren would be providing power to the facilities themselves.
Right, because Ameren is large enough to provide the power needed, and the small municipal power plants that service the area are just not big enough to provide the amount of power needed to fuel these two businesses.
So if the discount was below Ameren's cost of service, this would be a pure distribution of cost to the other ratepayers Ameren has, which includes, I believe, everyone in your district as well.
My district and yours, right. And yes, it would, if it goes below cost. And I think that's a really critical point. So the idea of the amendment that you offered earlier that keeps the rate low but above Ameren's cost to do business is very important to me. It means that then my ratepayers will not be on their backs that these jobs are created. And again, at the end of the day, you know, I haven't even at this point, until I've heard everything, determined how I'm going to vote. My desire is to vote to increase jobs in an area that is very poor, very low income, and desperately needs jobs. So that's, you know, that's a top priority for me. And again, I have to consider at what costs and whether this bill is written in a way, you know who doesn't have any skin in this game is Ameren. Everything was written in here that protects Ameren. They're providing the power, but they're going to be able to recoup any costs that they would incur during this process. But there are some ideas and some things that could be put in that actually help provide the Public Service Commission with the tools it needs in order to ensure that what they're doing, based on whatever market changes there may be over the 10-year period of when this rate would be put into place. So I sort of want to back up and talk about the specifics of that, because that's something that concerns me. I think that you and I have both read in this bill that it says that this rate can be provided for up to 10 years.
Yes.
Well, what we know is that corporations and businesses really want that certainty of a 10-year rate. And if I were in their shoes, or in their steel mill or smelter, I would want that certainty too.
Mm-hmm.
This says up to 10 years, but what we know, what this bill also says is that once the Public Service Commission has established a rate for whatever the term of the agreement is, that it will not change that rate during that term. So if the Public Service Commission says, well, we're only going to give you 3 years, there's a question about whether these businesses will say, well, should we locate there? I mean, I think the smelter is, should we have the smelter start up again, which I don't know if that's even likely.
Unfortunately, yes.
Because of, you know, the cost of the commodity that of the aluminum that they are going to produce. Is there more aluminum needed to be produced in this world when China produces a lot of aluminum and we can get a lot of aluminum from China? So if that business were to start up again and they wanted this 10-year rate established, the PSC doesn't have the ability, again, based on changing market conditions, to lower or raise their rate. So wouldn't you like to think that 10 years from now, Senator, that the rate you're paying to Ameren would be the same rate you're paying today?
Well, I'd like that at my own personal residence, Senator.
That's what I'm saying.
So and my business.
I'm saying, right, forget your business. Just for any of us to have that guarantee. So what I think we need to do is empower the Public Service Commission to take a look at things that may change in the market. And there was a word that was in a previous version of this bill that is no longer in there. And I'm gonna point you to that on section 393.356, which is on page 3 of the bill. It says, if the commission approves a special rate under the previous section, the commission shall lack the authority to modify or eliminate any such rate during the specified term subject to conditions established. And the conditions established, we'll talk about that in a minute. So the conditions established, we give the PSC very broad range to establish some kind of conditions that these businesses must meet. I want to go back and talk about that in a minute, too.
Okay.
But if we just inserted the word arbitrarily after lack the authority to arbitrarily modify or eliminate, certainly no business should expect the Public Service Commission to come in and for no good reason change their rate. Mm-hmm. They want, and I think that we should be able to give them that certainty. So I agree with that. So we don't want them to, but we don't want them to arbitrarily modify those rates. So that's one of the concerns that I have, that word was taken out somewhere along the way.
Okay.
And I think it was taken out maybe even inadvertently, although I don't want to say that, during the when House amendments were being put on. So that's an area that I have a little bit of concern. And, you know, I know we're trying to, this is going to be a holiday weekend. It's one of the disadvantages of making public policy in a special or extraordinary session, right? So we, from the get-go, have the clock working against us. Because, first of all, when we're here, it costs our state taxpayers additional dollars because we're working in this chamber, we're getting per diem, we're getting paid outside of the regular session. Right. And there's sort of a rush not to continue imposing upon our constituents back home additional costs to keep us here. So legislation that gets moved forward maybe more quickly than it should be otherwise. So we've got that sort of pressure on one end to let's get this done. But this is significant public policy. And again, since it's going to impact the ratepayers that I represent, I want to make sure it's put together as tightly and narrowly as it can in order to protect those same ratepayers that we are here representing.
And Senator, I would agree with you that nobody wants us to be here spending the taxpayer dollar and per diem costs and what have you more than we have to be. But that being said, I feel like the bill that came over to us from the House doesn't currently have the protections needed in order to protect my constituents. And so I think that there is a pretty reasonable expectation that there are some amendments that we're going to be offering tomorrow that will provide those protections or, as you've pointed out, some additional parameters. And certainly I know that if we amend it, that the House will be back in session considering what we send them on Tuesday. But when we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars per day in per diem versus hundreds of millions of dollars a year in rate redistributions, that's something that we need to take the time that we need to make sure we get this right.
Right. And so I know that there are pressures to bear for us to move forward and get this done, but I wanted to talk about that. So, I have a couple of other things I'd like to go over with you. First of all, there is now an emergency clause, I believe, on this bill. Yes, with an emergency clause. So we'll be asked to vote on that, too. And, you know, in the Senate, it's very different than in the House, where we can have a whole conversation around the necessity of an emergency clause. So I'm hopeful that at some point in time, either during the hearing today or here on the floor, we'll hear about the necessity of moving this forward more quickly than by August 28th.
I agree with you, Senator. And there's as the Senator from Buchanan pointed out, there's a lot of unknowns here, all the way from the identity for the company to exactly how much this would cost other ratepayers. So we need to make sure we take the time to find out all these answers. I agree with you.
Well, it's interesting. So the identity of the company, which I think was just disclosed by a great reporter, Tony Messenger, that identity of the company, I think it makes sense. I just sort of Googled them, and they exist. I don't know anything more about them because you asked to inquire of me. But, I think that we can find that out. I know that sometimes in economic development, when businesses go a different route to get help that they need or to get economic development tools from the state, that oftentimes until the deal is made, that they do remain undisclosed. So it's not totally different from current practices, although it gives everybody a little bit of heartburn when we say, well, who is it we're even dealing with here? But I don't think it's really that far from what current practice is. Again, not in this, because this is brand new legislation. This is different than how we've handled economic development tools for businesses before.
I agree with that assessment. I think that you're right. On one hand, that it's not unusual for that information to be kept confidential. So if the company signs an agreement with the state in order to keep that information confidential, that's one thing. But I'll tell you, Senator, you and I are members of the state. I feel like that the body probably should have access to that information.
Well, and we know that there's at least one representative who knew who the company was
yes.
before. But
yes.
But I don't think it's because they signed an agreement. I think it's until they sign an agreement and then they become disclosed. So it's not that we're going to be operating in the dark, if you will, should this go through and should these companies sign with the state of Missouri. If they don't sign, I don't know that we'll ever know who they were. But we also have to keep in mind that this legislation, this 50-megawatt standard has been put into place, and it has been broadened. So any manufacturing business or any kind of business that would come in and use that much power, which is, from what I understand, a very high bar, so very few companies would be able to come in and establish themselves using that much electric power in the future. But we have, by the passage of this, we have put into place an opportunity for other businesses to take advantage of a special electric rate paid for the ratepayers in whatever part of the state that electricity is provided through. I wanted to talk to you about one other thing.
Okay.
This, if that's okay, and this is
yep.
your inquiry,
nope.
so you
it's
can
okay.
keep talking to me
it's
about
okay.
whatever you want. But
better today than tomorrow.
Right, and that's why I didn't plan on getting up today, but are talking with you today. But you're right. Tomorrow, people are going to want to move forward, and so
right.
to get these questions out, and frankly, before the committee hearing comes up, so that maybe some of these questions will be raised then.
And I think they're all waiting in the committee hearing room right now, so perhaps they're listening.
Well, I want to say hello to everyone, and I hope that seat that was saved for me is still available.
Very good.
Let me just comment. In that regard. All right, so I wanted to talk about the idea of this is about job creation. And we give the Public Service Commission wide latitude to set up the parameters in this bill, wide latitude to set up the parameters under which these businesses will be required to operate. I'm okay with giving them wide latitude in one respect, but if this is really about job creation, I am unclear why it isn't specified in the bill that some of the things that the Public Service Commission needs to incorporate into those parameters is the number of jobs over what period of time. Now, I'm not in a position to prescribe what that number should be. We heard in the committee anywhere from 550 down to 450 jobs for the smelter, right? And I can't remember, but it was, I think, less than 200 for the steel plant. I don't know those numbers, and I don't want to pretend that I know or understand what they should be, but I think we should make sure that the Public Service Commission knows that the number of jobs created and sustained at certain wages, whatever the Public Service Commission determines those should be, that annually we find out, as a legislative body that put this into place, whether whatever those metrics are being met. And we also want to know that the business has some skin in the game besides just their costs, that they're doing investment in our state and in the communities that have opened their doors and welcomed them there to provide jobs. So I don't know if we're going to be able to amend this bill. I'm hopeful that members of the Public Service Commission are listening and will get the message that as part of the system of metrics that they put into place in dealing with these kinds of businesses, that because our intent is job creation, that we need to be specifically tying these lower rates to creating jobs in these communities that really need to be getting jobs. Those jobs are the only reason I'm even considering supporting this legislation. I want to make sure at the end of the day that I know that in 5 years that the jobs that people do, and forgive me because I don't know what they are, but that there isn't some kind of mechanical robot that can replace the human being, and that we have continued to provide this rate that it looks like the Public Service Commission may be locked into when we are replacing people with machinery that is doing certain kinds of work. So those are some of my concerns around this bill that I hope will come up during the hearing so that we can make sure that we are doing our due diligence, putting into place legislation that doesn't put my constituents or yours on the hook for something that we may have underestimated the cost to them, or we may have underestimated the number of jobs or the way in which these businesses will be supporting people in our state. So those are some of my questions. But this is your inquiry. So
very, very good, Senator. I appreciate the inquiry. I know we're going to have a good discussion tomorrow. As I said, I think we both have shared some concerns about this bill. And understanding that there's going to be pressure for the holiday, I just wanted to make sure that it was understood that I won't let the presence of the holiday happening the following couple of days stop me from preventing a bad deal for my constituents. So
I appreciate
the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you,
and
Senator.
Good luck in the committee. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francis, what reason your eyes? Senator 23rd, yes. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you taking the inquiry. You know, one of the things that we really have to consider is that one thing I pushed for in this language over the week, I stayed up here all week to be involved as much as I can in massaging this language, was to make sure that the rate did not fall below the incremental cost of doing business. And that would preserve the protection of other consumers having to pay for this. The language is in there that they will consider the incremental cost.
Okay.
But it does allow the PSC to consider going less than that if they feel it's necessary. The one thing that we also need to remember in this process is that this is going to be new load. And when you have new load, let's say, just for sake of argument, that based upon the return on equity for the utility company is that they can generate $100 million a year in rates. That's their number based upon their equity investment. This new load may add another $10 million a year worth of revenues. Follow me? So without any additional equity or infrastructure build or cost of doing business, Ameren is actually going to generate an extra $10 million at this discounted rate. That will help offset the consideration for if it has to go below the incremental cost of doing business.
So that's assuming that the rate is not below their incremental cost of service?
Even if it goes below the cost of incremental service, the extra volume that's going to be generated without any additional equity is still going to restrict Ameren from generating more than their $100 million that they're eligible to get on the return on equity.
Right.
just following the math. So actually, Ameren will have to be careful in considering this additional revenue because it could cause them to go above their allowable rate of return on equity by the additional revenues that are coming in, even at a discounted rate.
Which would factor into, yes, if they were making additional net profit on what they were selling to the smelter and the steel mill, that additional money would be counted against the profit cap and would be factored into their future rate increases, I think is what you're saying.
Right, and we have a couple of specialists that are going to be testifying in committee today that will help better understand how this new load, additional load, can be an offset if the PSC has to consider going less than the incremental cost of doing business.
But then, yes, Senator, I agree with you. If it goes below the cost of service, though, it can detract from what's essentially going to happen is it's going to detract from where they were, so there's going to be a gap from where they started at, and that will be factored into the PSC.
Plus, we have to factor in the new load. This is additional revenues coming in because this is electricity that they weren't otherwise selling. One of the biggest problems, and we've heard over this past year, is that Ameren is producing more electricity than they can really sell at this time.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, although when you're saying that they're not selling it to a consumer right now, they're selling it out of state.
Out on the market at a discounted rate.
So if they take a... If they could give such a discount that it goes below that market rate, so they essentially have to put it into the smelter or the steel mill at a rate below what they could sell it on the open market anyway, then that loss is what the other rate payers will have to reimburse. That's what I'm trying to protect against.
And I understand that, and I agree with you. That's been some of my argument over the last several years.
You had the bill at the beginning of this week that would have prevented that, if I'm not
mistaken. Right. It would have capped it or set a baseline that it could not go below the incremental cost. And so as this bill has come out, I am still evaluating and wanting to see that the additional load, will it be enough to offset the PSC going below incremental cost? That is the question that has to be answered today in the hearing. And that's what I want each member of this body to be listening for, because I think that's the biggest hiccup we have with this bill right now. Are other consumers going to have to pay for this? Or by the process of additional load and the consideration by the PSC going below the incremental cost, offset each other. That's the point I want to make today that we need to be watching for.
So you and I are both on the same page that we don't want a scenario in which other rate payers are forced to subsidize the operations down to the Boot Hill.
Correct. And I believe right now, the way I'm reading the language, we have an opportunity that offsets. We have the new load that's going to help offset that so that those consumers aren't going to be burdened with additional cost.
Okay.
But we're going to look at it and make sure and determine what that is.
Then if that is the case, that is not my understanding, Senator, but if that is the case, then certainly we'll factor that into the decision.
Well,
I'm simply trying to protect the rate payers from subsidizing a special deal that is so special that it's actually being the cost redistribution is going back onto my constituents.
I understand, and I want to have that conversation and see where we come out on that. Thank you, Senator.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Buchanan, what region do you rise?
Senator from St. Francois.
Senator from St. Francis, yield. Proceed.
Senator, I hope the senator from the 23rd sticks around because I want him to hear my story with you. The language that's on page 2 of the printed bill, lines 24 through 29, very clear. It says the commission must allocate the reduced revenues from the special rate as compared to the revenues that would have been generated at the rate the facility would have paid without the special rate. So in other words, if they give the facility a rate of, say, 10 cents a kilowatt hour, but the normal rate that the facility would have paid without the special rate was 20 cents a kilowatt hour, then the difference is 10 cents a kilowatt hour for all of that power. And then it says that they have to make an adjustment through a uniform percentage adjustment to all components of the rate bases of all customer classes. So it's extremely clear to me that if they give them a better rate, they take the difference between that rate and what it would have been without it, and they put that revenue, they allocate that cost or that amount of revenue to all of the other classes. I mean, it can't be interpreted any other way.
That, and I understand what you're saying there. That is clear. But what I'm saying is the new load that's going to be created by these two new entities coming in is going to be additional revenue coming into the system. Ameren is going to be capped based upon a return on equity of X amount of revenues. And so we have to take into consideration in the formula that there is additional revenues coming in, even though it's a discounted rate, is coming in at an X amount of value. That has to be considered into that formula as well.
Okay, well, that may be true, but there is no way that you can know whether or not it will result in an increase in cost to all the other ratepayers. I mean, you can't know that. I mean, all you can know is they have to increase the rate that all of the other ratepayers pay, and then if there is an adjustment because they're over-earning, everybody will go down, but you can't know in advance whether or not they would compensate. In other words, this language has got to come out. It's got to. If you're going to achieve not raising the cost on the other ratepayers.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing a couple of experts in this field and their testimony. That's going to be one of my main questions. Will the additional load growth help compensate or offset this discount that's going to these particular entities so that it does not become a cost to the other consumers?
Well, I hope you focus in on the language that I'm talking about.
I'm very familiar. I mean, you and I have been having this conversation many, many years on this particular issue.
Mr. President?
Senator Buchanan?
If I might inquire the Senator from the 23rd.
This isn't your inquiry. Senator Francis has the floor.
No, I have the floor, Mr. President.
You've taken the floor.
Okay, Senator Buchanan.
Yeah, I have the floor, and I'm requesting to inquire of the Senator from the 23rd.
Senator from 23rd, yield and proceed.
I wanted to grab you before you went out of the room, Senator.
Water.
Oh, I know.
Now I don't get water.
You're going to be dry. We need to get a water utility bill going here. But anyway, the two points that I wanted to run by you. First of all, is that if indeed this does raise rates on the other ratepayers in the district, in the Ameren service area, one of those big consumers of electricity is the state of Missouri. Because we have lots of buildings, including this one, in the Ameren service area. And so this baby might have quite a big fiscal note for the state of Missouri. Did you think about that? So it's really important that we know whether or not this bill is going to allocate costs to the other ratepayers, because we're one of them, and we need to know that. I mean, we ought to have that information in order to make a free and fair choice as to whether to vote for this bill.
And I think that this is the senator from the 24th mentioned this. This is one of the disadvantages of operating in a special session.
Right.
Because we don't have the time to do the research or have the discussion without pressure that we would have in a regular session, which is why these special sessions are constitutionally restricted to extraordinary events. So I agree with that, and I agree with you that we need to apply what are the estimated numbers. The senator from St. Francis talks about they're expected to have experts in the committee hearing. I'll be interested to know exactly what the numbers are supposed to look like going into this deal, because I've heard a lot of guesses, and I know that Noranda was paying $160 million a year in electric, and theoretically, without information to the contrary, I mean, that entire $160 million a year could be redistributed to someone else to the other ratepayers. So I want to know. I want to know what these numbers look like before we go into this.
Right. And how much will it cost us? Will it be another $1 million a year? Maybe the Office of Administration could testify as to how much the electrical bill is here in the city of Jefferson City, and if it goes up, 5-10% or whatever, how much that would be. Did you ever see the movie The Jerk?
Yes.
And you remember in The Jerk where they took the phone book and they just opened it up, and the one guy goes, "That guy right there." And it turned out to be the character played by Steve Martin. Remember that? Well, I thought I would sort of kind of take the phone book for Jefferson City right here, since we're in the Ameren service area, and just open it up randomly and put my pen down. And it says right here, Priscilla Ford. Now, I totally drew Priscilla Ford's name out of the phone book randomly, totally. Priscilla Ford. Somebody needs to call up Priscilla and
tell Priscilla to watch
the proceedings of the legislature today, because Priscilla, we might be ultimately raising your electric rates. Thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator of the Fifth, what reason you rise?
Ten Quar, the Senator from the Third.
Senator Buchanan, yield. Is that your inquiry, Senator Buchanan?
Senator from the Third.
Senator from the Third. Sergeant Arms. Sergeant Arms, would you retrieve the Senator from the Third? Senator, do you yield for an inquiry?
Yes, I do.
Proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator. How are you?
Good afternoon. Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. So here we are in an extraordinary session, and I wanted to just ask you, what is so extraordinary about this session?
This is because, as my understanding is, that there's a decision needs to be made by June 1st on this issue so that the company that is looking to come into the Sikeston area can determine whether or not we fit their needs for opening a steel mill plant. That's the reason why it's extraordinary, because we're on a time clock.
So we're talking about a company that have not even decided to come here, correct?
Correct. And part of their decision-making process to come here is to know what it's going to cost them to operate here.
So would it be true to say that Ameren UE would fall under the extraordinary session, being that Ameren UE, too, will create jobs, not just in the Boot Hill, but throughout the state of Missouri?
Well, I would disagree with that, and because it's not time sensitive. There's no time frame that's predicated on making a decision about Ameren.
But we do know for a fact, though, that Ameren UE will create thousands and thousands of jobs. Jobs that is needed not just in the Boot Hill, but throughout the state of Missouri. But we also know that at the same time we have a what if.
Well, but this is where we
factor here, where about we don't even know if this company will come to St. Louis. But we do know that Ameren UE will create thousands and thousands of jobs as a result of upgrading their infrastructure by way of their grids.
And this
so why shouldn't
disagree?
That be extraordinary?
Well, because this is where we disagree, is that I believe that through the current PSC system, Ameren can invest as much as they want in new infrastructure. There's not anything in current statute or current PSC rules or regulations that impedes Ameren from doing the infrastructure replacement that you're talking about.
So the language that was taken out of the bill here would have given the PSC the authority to allow for Ameren to cause infrastructure upgrades, right?
It would have given them more tools to use to what I see as the ability to have more rate increases, more easily request rate increases on the customers.
Well, I don't think you're too concerned. I mean, I don't think you're too concerned about rate increases, because what this bill would do is also create an increase with the consumers, with the residents throughout the state of Missouri. So, I mean, your concern about rate increase now goes out the door. But what I'm saying to you, Senator, is that here we have a company in our own state that we know will create thousands and thousands of jobs here in the state of Missouri. And we're we're shutting the door on them. We're saying, no, we're not going to help you create a better infrastructure for many of the Missourians here in the state of Missouri. We have seen time and time again power outages for days where people have lost their food.
But those are storm-related.
Regardless of what it is, we have a crumbling infrastructure, okay? And some of them have been underground. So it wasn't just storm-related. We have a crumbling infrastructure that we are not willing to fix. And I think this is a perfect time, because this is extraordinary, because we will create 3,000 jobs, not just 500 jobs in Boot Hill, And I just don't understand why you cannot wrap your head around the fact that our infrastructure in our state is constantly crumbling, and you don't want to do anything about it. But you want to be able to deal with a what if. Because, again, we don't even know if this company we didn't know the name of the company just up until an hour ago. We don't even know if this company is going to choose this state. And it's only bringing in 500 jobs for one area of the state. When you know and I know that if we are able to begin to deal with the infrastructure problem that we're having due to the grids, if we're able to deal with that, we know for a fact that there will be jobs here throughout the state of Missouri.
What I do know is that the Ameren Company is at an all-time high with their stock values. They're a very profitable company. They have a lot of revenues that they're generating through those profits. I think it behooves them to reinvest in their company with those profits, as any business would. And that's what my challenge is to them, is they have the ability right now to do that infrastructure build, put people to work, and they can do it if they wanted to.
So who's to say that this new company doesn't have the ability to do what they need to do, because they're a billion-dollar company as well? Why do we have to give them corporate welfare? Why should we have to give them corporate welfare to come into our state to do business and make money on the backs of the resident increase?
That's the challenge that you have the privilege to make.
This is like oxymoron to me. Because you want to take care of a company that you don't know, that you don't even know if this company is coming. But this same company that you want to be able to give a corporate handout to, they can come in here without us having to do that. Just like you're saying, Ameren can do what they need to do without us having to give them the options to go before the PSC to do an increase.
And that's the reason why this bill states explicitly that if they didn't receive this special rate, they would not be able to open up in Missouri. So the PSC has to determine that the only way this company could open up is if they were considered a special rate. That's part of this bill, and that's part of the language that protects Missourians in that regard.
But do you agree, Senator, that we have a problem with our infrastructure, and it's outdated, old, and it needs to be repaired?
I think there's some that needs
to be
done,
of the grid.
But I think Ameren needs to step up and start doing it. They have the ability to do it now. They have the cash flow to do it now. They have the PSC guidelines to do it now. They have just chosen not to do it.
So they have the ability. Do you think the company that's coming in here, do they have the ability to just come in without having to ask for a corporate welfare?
That I don't know. That will have to be under a PSC.
Why didn't you study that? I mean, why didn't you study that company thoroughly as you studied Ameren? Because they may not need it either, but you're giving it to them.
We're not giving it to them. They've got to go through an application process through the PSC.
And that's all Ameren wants to do. They want to be able to go to the
have
PSC.
Have it already. Ameren already has it in current standard and rules and regulations of the PSC.
You know what? We are not going to agree here, but I just want to say that at the end of the day, here we know for a fact that if we are able to deal with our aging infrastructure by way of new grids, then we know that we would no longer have power outages. We know that we would no longer have to deal, people would no longer have to deal with food that's spoiled as a result of the power outages because of our crumbling infrastructure. We know that at the end of the day, 3,000 jobs can be created throughout the state of Missouri, not just in one area, which is the Boot Hill. And that's my concern. That's my concern. And I don't even know if I'll be supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Of business of introduction of guests, petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, 7th-14th, concurrent resolutions, 7th-14th, what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, I have a Senate concurrent resolution.
Send the resolution forward. Do you care to explain your concurrent resolution, Senator?
Yes, this is legislation that I filed in 2013 and 2014, and what it deals with is removing the EPA from overseeing the Westlake landfill and having FUSRAP, which is the formerly utilized Site Remediation Action Program, replace the EPA. Obviously, many people may know about the bills that were filed in the federal House and Senate yesterday. However, those bills have been filed before, and they didn't go as far as they needed to go, didn't even have a hearing on those bills. So I just wanted to encourage our federal legislators to pass this legislation, as it is very important to the people in my district and the people of the state of Missouri.
Your concurrent resolution will be printed in the journal. Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. Senator 14th.
Mr. President, I have a bill.
Send the bill forward. Madam Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill No. 7, introduced by Senator Chappelle Nadal, an act relating to contaminated homes.
Senator, would you like to explain your bill?
Yes, this is the bill that should have passed the House of Representatives a couple of weeks ago. It is very important that the people who live within a certain parameter of a landfill with legacy radioactive waste have some type of remediation, including home buyouts. It is so unfortunate, Mr. President, that I have had to see time and time again people getting sick because of the air quality and because of the contamination in their water. So I don't know if y'all know this or not, but there's $1 million sitting at the Department of Natural Resources to try to buy out some of these homes. And because this legislation did not pass, this is money, taxpayer money, that will not be utilized to save lives. And that's unfortunate. And I want to save lives, which is why I'm offering this bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on second reading.
Senator from Newton. Seeing no objection, excuse me, Senator. The Senate will go to the order of business of House bills for second reading. Senator from Newton.
House Committee Substitute House Bill 1.
House Committee House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1, an act relating to rate making for public utilities.
Commerce, Consumer Protection, Energy, Environment.
Senator from Cole.
And without objection, Senator, go to the order of business of announcements, and I'd like you to recognize me for an announcement.
Senator from Cole, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, in a few minutes, I will be making a recess motion until approximately 15:30 today, Mr. President. That is 3:30. And I know the senator from Clay is going to talk about a committee meeting he has. For the benefit of the body, we can always go in later, so I want him to take as much time as he and his committee needs. But sometime at that time or after, we will come in for a session that will be technical in nature only. There will be no business conducted, as always. All members are welcome to come to a technical session, but I wanted the body to know that when we re-adjourn this afternoon, it will be for technical nature only, and that we will be making an adjournment motion after that technical session till 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Further announcement, Senator from Clay. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Commerce, Energy, and the Environment will meet in 30 minutes upon adjournment, so 1:45 in the Senate lounge.
Further announcements? Seeing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 15:30 this day.
The Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand in recess until 3:30 p.m. this day. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate is in recess.